Hello and welcome to Matchsticks and Microphones, the Calgary Flames blogcast. This is for the week of February 8th, 2011. I am your host, Justin. I'm your host, Justin Azevedo. I'm on Twitter at AzevedoJ and then the fourthlineblog.com, who is with me tonight.
Hi, I'm Haley from Matchsticks and Gasoline, Hayes Face on Twitter.
Hey, I'm Eric. I'm on Matchsticks and Gasoline, Fourthline Blog, and I'm Fourthline Blog on Twitter.
Hey, I'm Ryan Lambert. I'm from Puck Daddy and Flames Nation, and I am on Twitter at Two Line Pass.
I'm Walk Invisible, making my inaugural journey on the Matchsticks and Microphone efforts. Hitthepost.ca and Twitter at Hitthepost.
And it's Mike from Hitthepost as well, and I'm just kind of hanging back having a beer. So,
pretty lax show tonight. I mean, no games on. Well, in terms of the Flames, I guess. Last week it was kind of exciting with the end of the Nashville game, I guess, in the shootout. But big game last night against the Blackhawks, and that's what we'll go to in our first segment.
The smoke!
So, as I said, big game last night against the Blackhawks. 3-1 win. Curtis Glencross getting that second, that game-winner goal, top Ched. And then Rene Bourque getting the monkey off his back with the empty netter at the end. And then everybody's favorite prospect, Michael Backlund, with the first goal. I guess that was also top Ched, too. And, I mean, like I said, me and Walk Invisible, and actually Mike, were at the game, and we all had a pretty excellent time with it. It was a very fun game, and very fun to watch. Game before that, was against Los Angeles, and a bit disappointing on the Saturday night, HNIC. I mean, I was a bit angry with it, as you can probably read in the game thread on Matchsticks and Gasoline if you were there. Yeah. But 4-3 loss in the shootout after seven rounds, I believe, and nobody scored after the second round except for the guy that eventually put it away, Justin Williams, for the Kings, and that was kind of disappointing, but they bounced back. Before that, it was Atlanta. We won 4-2, and I don't really remember much from that game, but I'm sure it was hard-fought on both sides. So does anybody have any thoughts about the past three games this week?
Well, I guess you got to like the way they continue to get points and they continue to be in the hunt for the playoffs. I mean, they're playing fairly convincing hockey at this point that, you know, where before they were getting wins and you would say, yeah, but they weren't really that good in terms of how they played or whatever. But lately, I think you can't really say that.
I think it's been fun hockey. I know I've actually gone to two of the last three games, and I have to say it's been not just Dome Beers that makes it fun, but it's actually been a fun brand of hockey to watch, as opposed to sort of trap-like hockey that they've been playing the last couple months.
So do you think there's a specific reason for that?
Everybody seems to think so. I'm not sure if there's a reason for it, if they're just winning, and winning is fun.
Better being gone has made everything so much brighter in the room. Everyone's so much happier.
I would say, I've heard rumors that, you know, when Sutter left, they uninstalled all the dungeons and the torture instruments and the Minotaur labyrinths that they used to keep. So I'm sure that's led to a much nicer atmosphere in the South Dome.
A couple of Sutter's cows on the family farm were probably sacrificed and to appease the hockey gods, and that's obviously been working out for us. Because, I mean, aside from a couple of wins, I guess, this week against Chicago and the efforts against Los Angeles, wasn't a win, but there was definitely a lot of bounces going the Flames' way, and maybe they weren't technically deserving of the wins, but they were getting the bounces and the puck was going in the net, and that's why they were getting those 2 points.
I would say, though, that they kind of got bounces to go against them, too. That first goal Kiprusoff gave up on Saturday against the Kings was just brutal. I think it was the Scuderi goal. Like, that was horrible. And so, I mean, if you're going to give and get those kind of bounces in the course of a hockey game, then I guess you just take the points overall.
Well, then they got it right back, too, because Quick let in that pretty awful goal against from Regier. I guess that shot just kind of bounced through and eventually made a foot in
the
back.
He's not a good goalie, John Quick. No. Like, he's just not good. I don't get it.
So we'll move on to our next segment, the bonfire.
The bonfire.
So just a quick recap of the week's news. Obviously, the big story this week was the retirement of Craig Conroy and his awful shirt that he was wearing at his retirement ceremony. obviously, great career from the guy. Always loved watching him play. Guy played with a, this is going to sound really cliche, but guy played with a lot of heart. He, when he went out there, he was going to work his, skate his ass off. And, I mean, you could always count on him with, for those defensive zone face-offs and put his body out there and block that shot in the penalty kill. Cause I mean, he loves to play the penalty kill too. And, it's good to see that they were able to keep him around in the organization, even if it is a relatively manufactured role, being the special assistant to the acting general manager.
It was pretty great seeing him in the press box on the weekend and last night. I guess I'm cheering for all the goals, and he just looked so excited.
I think, personally, I think he made a statement with that shirt. I think the statement was
yes.
was fun. It's going to bring the fun.
I don't know if you noticed, but last night he was proper. Like, he just dressed real slick, actually, at the game last night.
Yeah,
but,
he was taking some fashion risks and looked sharp.
No purple, shiny, metallic shirt.
I liked that shirt. I liked that shirt. I don't know. I mean, maybe I just have an awful sense of fashion, but I don't know. I would wear that. That's just me.
Yes.
I think that's well established, Justin, with the sweater vests.
You know what?
If you could see him now, like really.
I'm wearing pajamas. It's pretty decent.
It's pretty amazing, actually. I think the first thing I said to him today was, what are you wearing? It was great.
I mean, unless anybody's else got anything to say, giving Conroy his praise, I mean.
I just wanted to bring up the letter he wrote. Was that to the Calgary Sun?
Yes.
Calgary Sun,
and
yeah.
It was just a great letter. It was just one of those ones where it was like, I teared up a little bit reading that. I was just like, he's such a class player, and it's such like a classy letter he wrote. And it was just like, it was so honest and heartfelt. I know that's all just like cheesy crap, but it was a great letter. And, you know, one of those things that you wish you, like all players would write, when, you know, when they leave a team.
I guess that's my only thought on Conroy, is just it's a little too bad that, you know, he's doing this job where he's shadowing the GM. Like, we're never going to see him really doing anything.
I think we will. I think he'll be the visible, you know, the guy. Not that Jay Feaster has not made himself available. He's clearly much more available than Daryl Sutter ever was. But I think Craig Conroy will probably be even more available in public circumstances.
Well, I mean, even just starting out with the after hours on Saturday. He's already talking about the team and, you know, talking about his roles there. And he said he was going to fly out to Abbotsford eventually this week. And, I mean, if he's doing stuff, good for him. Better to actually have some involvement with the organization than to just be sitting up there for the games.
I think, too, that it's a pretty shrewd move by the organization to do that, just because in terms of public perception, like, even if they start playing pretty badly again and they don't make the playoffs or whatever, they can roll out Conroy and he'll do his little song and dance for the media, be very earnest about things, and then he'll get everybody on his side. Because you know who was the most broke up about Conroy retiring? It wasn't the fans or the players. It was the people in the press that covered the team every day. They always knew you could go to him for a good, honest quote or whatever. And so I think he can be an effective tool for the team in that way. Just go out and deflect things a little bit.
Favorite interview I've ever seen, or at least sports interview I've ever seen, was him after game 7 of the first round of 04.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and he's pouring his heart out to that guy. I mean, he's talking with Jelena before the game. He's like, oh, you know, you ever scored an overtime goal? And Jelena with the line, oh, let's not make this go to overtime. And then just prophetic, it does go to overtime. Jelena puts that in. I mean, I was excited for that goal, personally. I don't know about you guys. I'm going to assume yes. But, I mean, just such a good guy. And I've had the chance to actually meet him and talk to him various times. And he's always been very accommodating and very good dude. So, good for him. Enjoy retiring, Connie. And I guess we'll see him on the ice for the alumni game that was announced today, so that should be fun. Cool. Moving on from that, so Lance Boma coming up from Abbotsford, and I mean, he didn't play very much in the first game. I think it was 4 minutes and 8 seconds or something like that, but I mean, he went out there, he made his presence felt, and then last night, getting the apple for his first NHL point and a couple block shots out there, and I mean, he's definitely using his size to his advantage. I mean, you don't really tell that he's a guy that has been playing in the NHL all year. He's adjusted really well to the NHL game, even in his limited minutes. Well, we think. I mean,
it's really difficult to make pronouncements like exactly. that based on, I think, like 11 minutes of ice time or whatever it's been.
As you said, it is sample size, very limited, but I've been pleased with his play thus far, and it doesn't look like, or at least after yesterday, it doesn't look like Sutter was really, I guess, sheltering.
He was already being sheltered on the fourth line.
Exactly. So, I mean, for what he's been called up for, I think he's doing perfectly fine at this point.
He also seemed to be taking shorter shifts than the rest than Backlund and Kostopoulos. He seemed to be racing back to the bench after, you know, 30 seconds. Those guys would stay out a little bit longer, it seemed to me anyway. But agreed. I thought he had a great game. I thought he showed his skills and kept it simple and kept his feet moving and all the cliches. He was great.
I mean, you never want to see a guy, you know, injured for a long time. So obviously we hope Hagman gets healthy, but I'm not going to complain about giving Boma some ice time and giving him some time to, you know, feel his way around the team and the league.
So I guess that leads into our next topic of conversation pretty easily, is that, I mean, we have guys like Steos and or I guess just still sitting up in the press box. And, you know, there's been a lot of talk about waiving him and, you know, the direction the team should be going within the next year or so. And personally, I don't really think it's a good idea for him to be waived just because, I mean, we lose maybe, like, we might lose an asset. Somebody at the trade deadline might be looking for that old steady defender for their bottom pairing guy. And maybe you can get a fifth round pick for him. Well, I'm being optimistic, okay? I'm being optimistic. But the point is, he doesn't need to be waived at this point because, I mean, when you waive Kotalik was playing pretty regularly for the most part. Or at least when he came back from his injury, he was playing pretty regularly. So you waive Kotalik and then you open up a roster spot for a guy like Bowman to come in. I don't really see much point in waiving Steve Staios because you subject him to the waivers, he might get picked up. I think there is at least some value to having him around in terms of having, like, a, you know, maybe a trade chip at the deadline. Derek obviously disagrees with me, but there's been worse moves in the past year or so by GMs. And, I mean, even if you do waive him, what is that going to do?
Daryl Sutter picking him up in the first place.
And giving up a third-round draft pick.
Thank you, Ryan.
Plus.
Welcome. Aaron Johnson, yes. So, I mean, obviously we gave up quite a bit for him, and I don't think it's that out of the realm of possibility for somebody to give up a fifth round or sixth round draft pick for him. But anyways, that gets away from my main point.
It absolutely is.
Why?
Because he's terrible.
Well, I know he's terrible, but he was terrible in Edmonton. And Sutter still picked him up for a third rounder Aaron Johnson. But Sutter,
I mean, Glenn Sather's the only one that would take that contract.
Brian Murray.
But Brian Murray's not, he's selling this year. Well, he's not buying.
But see, Staios is a UFA after this year, though.
Yeah,
so maybe he tries to unload some salary or something for a player. And he gets back Staios. Like, maybe he tries to unload, like, a $1 million salary guy that's coming back for maybe 1 or 2 years signed that we can wave into Abbotsford or whatever.
I think the only kind of team that would take a guy like Staios is a team that's making a deep run into the playoffs. And I don't think any of those teams want a guy like Staios. I'm just trying to
be optimistic. I understand that it's very unlikely that he will be moved for anything of value. But, I mean, maybe the name comes up once or twice.
I think you're more likely to move a guy like Party. Party has value. Party, I could see a team picking him up, and he's also UFA. So unless he's getting signed in the next couple of weeks, I think they should move him. We should move him.
Well, we talked about this last night. I mean, the two most likely guys, if the Flames are still in this position at the deadline, to be moved, if the Flames even make any moves, because we don't have anything to trade away to get asset or to get top-line guys, and we don't have any really thing to giveaway if we want to still be in the playoff hunt. So really there's Glenn Cross and Party, and those are really the only guys that you're going to get equal value for when you trade away. Party, I mean, his ceiling probably is as a number four defenseman, and he is 26, 27 in a month or so. So maybe on a weaker caliber team, he would be a number four. I mean, here I don't really envision him moving up to number four next year, even if he does sign in, or when he does sign a new contract. So you got him. So maybe you trade him to a team that's looking to make that deep playoff run. I mean, like you said last night, he's a big guy. He does have some speed, and he plays physically. So maybe a team that is making that deep playoff run looks for him, gives up a number or a fourth round or third round draft pick. The other guy is Glenn Cross, and just because he is also UFA, he's got the speed, he's got the cachet as a 15 goal scorer now. I think it was 15th was last night. So, and then plus he's a penalty killer. So you're looking for probably a pretty good return on him too, because he's also cheap. And then I'm guessing next year probably won't be that much of a raise just because he is quite underrated or unknown around the league. So, I mean, maybe a second round or a third round draft pick for him too isn't that that crazy.
I guess the only thing about Party is the fact that he is a physical player also makes him a bit injury prone. He left last night's game and he's already missed some time with an injury this year. So I don't know if that would do anything to kind of decrease his value.
They were supposed to talk about what happened last night more today, but did anybody hear anything on Twitter or anything?
I'm pretty sure I don't know that. You know, he had a public appearance today. He was
he's at the Boys and Girls Club. It didn't really look that bad. Like, I mentioned this to you, is that when he went down, he went straight to the bench. I mean, but he was skating under his own power. He didn't really look that labored, and he did sit on the bench for a while after that. So I doubt it's that serious, but maybe a couple games, but as Haley said in her post-game, that probably the most likely scenario is that we will be seeing Steady Steve coming back for the next game or so if Party's not ready to go. So that's obviously a bad thing because
unfortunately
he's terrible and nobody loves him.
I think we have such a surplus of defensemen, both capable and less capable, I guess. I think we could afford to get rid of any of either Steos, Hardy, Mickelson for the following year. Like, we can bring up a guy like Brody next year as number six, and I think we'd be fine to do that. So getting rid of Steos this year for anything, really, ultimately, would be great. But I also think that maybe you unload Party and or Mickelson and try and get something in return for them for the future.
Yeah, I mean, aside from Party, those other four or other three or yeah, four guys. I mean, with you got Babchuk in there too, Mickelson, Brody, and Steos. I know, I hate Babchuk.
Is Babchuk a UFA?
No, I'd keep him. I think he's got one year. Does he not have one
year? No, I think he's UFA. He is UFA this year.
Okay, well, then get rid of that guy, too.
It's Kostopoulos we have, because I remember that was the big thing, is that we traded away White for a guy that's RFA again. Great. So, I mean, that's another thing, the FNF trade, and that's awful, the way that's shaken out for the Flames. But, I mean, yes, he is also UFA this year, and I also think that Babchuk gets some return, too, just because he has that big shot from the point, and lately he has been getting more power play time and more power play points. So, I mean, you got that angle on that, just like you have Glenn Cross in his penalty kill. But
he's not the worst option out there, I guess.
No, I mean, we have worse options on the team, probably three other of them. Like I said at the beginning, is that what the direction that you want to see the Flames take for the rest of this year and then for next year and beyond is that, in my opinion, I would like the team to be more of a crash and bang style while still having that speed. Like, using that speed to be able to forecheck hard and to still play physically. As much as we malign Daryl for his draft picks, there are some guys that fit into that mold, like Nemish and like Boma, that will in the next couple few years become NHL regulars and will be able to translate that to the NHL game.
Yeah, and I guess the only issue with that is when you talk about trading a guy like Glenn Cross, that's what he mostly brings to the table. And if you're getting rid of him, you're going to need to bring something similar back in return or in another deal, I guess.
The thing is that we're talking about these trades, unloading guys that honestly should be unloaded. The team isn't, it's not going to happen. The team isn't thinking that they have to move anybody. They're probably going to want to acquire people, whether or not they have the ability to do it is, I guess, something else. But, I mean, they're going to be in the thick of the playoff, better or worse, you know, for pretty much the remainder of the season, because, you know, all those teams are bunched up so close and they all have a similar number of games played or whatever, that there's never not going to be a point this year in which Calgary is more than 4 or 5 points out of a playoff spot, unless they really crash and burn hard. But I don't think they have time to do it before the deadline. So they're not going to trade anybody.
I agree with you. I think Fieser's got to, I mean, obviously it's a tough spot to be in. I think he has to roll the dice, though. I think you have to play carefully, because if you make the playoffs, you want to have enough players, you have to be deep enough to make a run. And yet, if you don't make the playoffs, you have to look towards next year. So I think what I would do if I was Fieser, which clearly I'm not for a number of reasons, you know, I would unload the UFA type players, the guys that you're going to probably lose next season anyways, the guys that aren't going to make a huge dent in your lineup. So yeah, Steos, if you can get rid of him, and then another one of the defensemen, okay. and then maybe a guy like Glenn Cross who you can replace with a Boma type, you know? You're not getting rid of your whole team, you're not getting rid of your core.
My response to that would be that Feaster is playing, or he's this team is playing for Feaster's job at this point. And so it's going to be like Don Waddell. Remember Don Waddell guaranteed a couple of years ago that the Thrashers would make the playoffs? And then he, you know, mortgaged their future, basically, to acquire guys like Alex Zhitnik. And he traded, like, a first-round pick and Braden Coburn for him. And, like, Feaster's doing the same thing. He wants to lose that interim status. He wants to be the general manager of the Calgary Flames for real. And so this is a team that he's pushing all in with this team right now. And if he has the ability to acquire anybody, he's going to do it. But I don't think he's going to try to get rid of Glenn Cross and then try to get a Glenn Cross equivalent back. Because why do that if you already have Glenn Cross? And if they don't make the playoffs or if they crash and burn and he doesn't get it, then it's not his problem anyway. What does he give a shit?
The thing with Feaster is he's not a big trade guy. The two biggest trades he's most remembered for are ones that he didn't really do by choice. You know, he was put under pressure by the Orrin Cowell circus. You know, those are the only two big trades he pretty much really ever made in his tenure in Tampa. Other than that, you know, trade deadline, he was trading pretty much third liners and fourth liners, you know, expanding defensemen and prospects. Like that, like his entire tenure, I went back and looked through, when I wrote that big piece on Feaster when he was first named the interim GM, looked through pretty much all of his trades. Like, I literally compiled a list of, like, somewhere around 100 different trades he made. And dear God, that's a pain in the ass to do, because there's no good list like that out there. And we're not going to see, if we see any movement, it's going to be, you know, Mickelson for a fourth liner or something really small. You know, you're not going to see Glenn Crosby. You're not going to see anything major happen, because that's just not the type of GM he is. He's not going to mortgage the future in any significant way, because that's just not the type of manager he is. Whether that's good or bad, right? And honestly, I think that's better than him, you know, trading a first round and Braden Coburn for Zitnik. It's still just, I think it's a lot of them, pretty much just a moot argument, because there's not going to be a whole lot happening for the Flames this year at the deadline. As terrible as the trades Sutter made at the deadline have been, it was definitely entertaining.
Entertaining in the wrong way. Wrong way, though.
There's definitely a possibility for trades to be made draft day or leading up to draft as well. Like, it's not like we all know that we have a first and then nothing till the fourth next year or this coming June, but that's, you know, you can change that on that day.
I was gonna say, the past few years trade deadline day has probably been one of the most nerve-wracking days for Flames fans. That and the first day of free agency.
And then you got guys like Radisson, and it's gonna, but then, anyways, I had to I kind of disliked the trade deadline so early this year, because by the time that the Flames hit that mark, I think they'll still have 21 or 22 games left in the season, whereas last year they had 16. So there's quite a gap there. And even, I mean, that's what, 9% of the season is that gap between those two. And it's going to harm the Flames, or I guess their prospects in terms of future growth, because we're going to be in a position where the pack probably will look like the exact same that it looks like now. And nobody will really have any idea if we're dropping out, if we're going forward. I think even if those six extra games were there for us, if we'd be able to get a much clearer view of if the Flames were going to be going to the playoffs or if they weren't. Because, I mean, last year, obviously, Daryl was under the impression that they were eventually going to make a playoff spot. And, I mean, you get guys like Steos, and I can't remember who the other trade was on the deadline day. You get those guys, and the reason you're putting them in the lineup is because you want some depth for that playoff run. You want that in case there's injuries. But I guess it just depends.
It was Toskala, by the way.
Toskala, thank you. But I guess it just depends on where Feaster evaluates the season to be when we hit that mark. Because if he thinks that we are still a viable playoff team, then I don't think he'll do anything. Or if he's smart, he probably won't do anything.
I will say that if he continues on the trajectory that he's on, I like what Feaster's done so far. The three moves, the waving of Conroy first, and then waving of Kotelik, and the recalling of Boma. If he continues on that trajectory, nice small little moves. I approve.
I mean, but that's all kind of basic stuff.
I agree. Like, but that's, I mean, maybe that's the road we need to walk down right now. I mean, Daryl was making these huge, showy, splashy trades.
Yeah.
We obviously know that wasn't the way to go.
Yeah.
So
and
little tweaks is maybe how to...
Sorry.
How to get the job done.
It's going to be difficult to evaluate Feaster just because he's never really had a competent ownership group, and he's never really had, like, Tampa isn't really a hockey market, and I would envision that sometimes...
No.
I would envision that sometimes...
Really, it's not, you think?
Yeah. Sometimes he would probably have issues with trying to get free agents there, but, I mean, Calgary is this hockey market. I mean, they still got Jerome, who the players still view as an elite player just based on what has happened over the past year or so, just, you know, calling Bomeister and essentially enticing him to come here. So, stuff like that. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what he's able to do and what he's able to do with what we already have in terms of prospects and stuff. And, you know, if the evaluations that he has for the Heat and... whatever ECHL or guys are in the Dub or whatever right now, if they'll be a major part of the Flames going forward past this year, or if he's going to try and, you know, maybe move them or just not really give them that chance because they don't fit that style of play that he's trying to project onto the team.
I'm kind of hung up on the whole Tampa's not a hockey market right now. I'm just like, they have had some of the best, like, attendance of a lot of teams over the past few years. When they were terrible, their attendance went down. But when they're good, I mean, they sell out. They have diehard fans. I mean, they're just like the Hurricanes, in which they have a lot of diehard fans that really care about that team.
You could say the same about Nashville. It doesn't mean you fill a rink.
They do fill the rink, though, fairly regularly.
Yeah, it depends. Well, obviously, it depends who's playing. But it's also a diehard town, and, you know, they don't get a lot of credit for having good attendance records.
Well, and isn't, like, Tampa Bay's not actually a place. Tampa Bay is just kind of like this conglomerate of two or three cities, right? Like,
yeah, that's the other problem is everything's, like, 2 hours from everything else. It's just driving anywhere down there is a pain in the ass.
I'm just looking on ESPN.com, the 2010-2011 NHL attendance charts, and the Lightning right now are averaging 16.6 grand per game, which is 84.1 capacity, so.
Well, I mean, that's a tough thing to figure out. One way or the other.
I mean, but this team is good, obviously, with the exception of the goaltenders, Dan Ellis' problems. But, I mean, like, they
have... Well, I mean, they got Dwayne Rollison now.
Yeah.
And, I mean, granted, he just gave up a 4 or 5 to Buffalo or whatever, but, I think going forward, they're a pretty good team to come out of the... They'll knock somebody off in the playoffs. I don't think they'll do much after that, but, you know, they're a good team.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of change over the past year, right? So, you mean, you get Yasmin in there, he's definitely making his ascension into the elite GMs in the league. You have the weather there, and when the team's good, the fans do come out. Yes, I mean, just coming back even to the attendance report, the year they won the Stanley Cup, they were number 12 in the league with 17.8 per game, which is a 91% attendance. But yeah, I mean, in the future, I mean, maybe not the past 2 or 3 years. I don't really think it has been a hockey market just because of the ownership and. You know,
they've been terrible.
Exactly. So, I mean, maybe they will come into their own. They will be that prime destination for free agents. I don't think they're there yet.
I think just the fact that Yzerman's there and they got a pretty good core. I mean, they're going to run out of money before they run out of people that want to play there, basically.
Agreed. That plus the fact that it's in Florida. I'm sorry. If I'm given the option of playing in Ottawa or Florida, I'm playing in Florida.
Even with the bad ice?
Even with bad. I mean, it's, come on, sunny year round. You have beaches. What else does a hockey player want?
You're in the NHL. You can pretty much get money from any team. And if it comes, like you said, if it comes down to a choice between playing in friggin' Ottawa or Tampa, it's a no-brainer. I went to college with a bunch of guys that play pro now, and I know a couple that like played in warm weather states, and they're just like, yeah, you go to practice. Get out of practice, you go to the beach, take a nap, then you go get dinner, and then you play a game.
Okay, so you got...
That's the life right there.
So, you know, you're saying the weather's a big thing. Would you rather play in Florida or in Vancouver?
I'd say Vancouver.
You would rather, with the teams right now, you would rather play in Florida than Vancouver if you were an NHL player?
Okay, I'm not going by teams. I'm just saying the city.
But
if you're picking a team based on just the city,
a nice
I'd go with Florida.
But then if you're an NHL free agent, why are you just picking based on the city? If you're a free agent, you want the team to be good, no?
Yeah.
My point is just that's – I'm just saying all the things being equal, the idea of like, oh, you know, it's not a Canadian hockey market isn't going to drive players away from playing for that team.
Yeah, no. I don't think anybody would argue that.
But I mean, it's the difference between playing for Florida, the Panthers, and playing for Tampa Bay. I mean, I don't know a lot of players that are going to want to go play for Florida because they're terrible, but they'll play for Tampa Bay because they've got Stevie Y and they're, you know, on the upswing and they've got Stamkos and they've got some great players and, you know, great fans. I mean, you can't, you know, you can hear a pin drop, but...
So, I mean, I'm contradicting my original point, but the main factor, if I'm an NHL free agent, I want to try and go to the best team there because it's going to give me the chance, best chance to win. I mean,
sure,
I would love to live in Florida, be warm or LA, whatever, on the beach. But my main decision when I'm signing that contract is if that team's good or not. Anybody else got anything to add on to that, I guess?
You mean the conversation that started with the Steos thing and ended up somewhere totally different?
That was really fun. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, it's good.
I guess the one thing we were before the conversation got into hockey markets was the whole thing about Feaster and his, you know, type of players and maybe not giving the type of players that wouldn't fit his mold a chance. I guess what's interesting about that is we don't really know what his type of player is yet. And the whole thing about, you know, not giving players that might not fit that a chance is kind of getting into Daryl Sutter territory. So I would like to avoid that.
The whole thing with Feaster is he's not a hockey guy. Like, it's been well established. He's a lawyer. He's a contract guy. And because of this, he doesn't really have a type of player. He's going to rely on the pro scouts, his interactions with the players personally, and mostly just the pro scouts. And, you know, and as far as the draft, you know, the amateur scouts, you know, to determine who should be and who should not be on the team. And he's going to be much more of a manager than the sort of guy who has like this vision of, what style he wants his team to play, how he wants them to build, what type of players he wants. He's not going to be like a Daryl Sutter where he has this image of really big, slow guys that can't skate as good.
At the end of the day, he still watches a team play every day, and he's probably going to form some opinions on, you know, what he likes in a player what he doesn't like. Yeah.
But, like, as a whole, Daryl Sutter had a very defined type of player. There was a Daryl Sutter player. There's not really a Jay Feaster player. There's players he likes, there's players he doesn't like, you know, that sort of thing. But there's not, like, a archetype.
Cool. So I guess we'll move on to our last segment then.
The Kindling.
So the next 4 games this week for the Flames, pretty compact with the back-to-back on Friday, Saturday. But they start out tomorrow against Ottawa, 7:30 our time, Mountain Time. They play Anaheim on Friday, also in Calgary, and that's 7 p.m. Vancouver, Hockey Night in Canada, 8 p.m., and that's in Vancouver. And then at Colorado on Monday, supposedly the first game that Forsberg will be playing in the NHL will be against Calgary. And our friend WI over here is pretty excited about that, being a big fan of FAPA.
Even though he's going to be terrible.
Oh, yeah, he's going to just suck. But
he is going to be awful.
I know, but I'm still excited. I'm still excited that he's coming back.
What's the line on him getting injured in this game?
There's a pool at work between me and, like, the four or five other hockey guys. Like, you pick, like, I think it's $5 a week. You could, like, buy 1 week at a time. And I think I have, like, the second week of March.
How many minutes did Doug Gilmour play when he came back with the Leafs that time before he went out with the knee injury? I want that same time. Exactly.
maybe 9 or something?
It wasn't even 9 minutes. I think it was his first shift. I think it was like 15 seconds.
Brutal.
That's what I'm going to take. I'm going to take 15 seconds.
But reading all the Avs fan stuff, like on Mile High Hockey, they're pretty excited, and they actually think that he's going to come in and make a very strong impact right away. I mean,
yeah, well, they're Homer idiots.
Yeah, we all know that the Avs fans are probably the second worst fans in the NHL other than Vancouver, but I mean,
Detroit.
I'm happy to hear that everyone
Detroit
shares the sentiment that he's not going to be the same great player he was when he comes back, because that's definitely the impression I've been getting from.
When was the last time he played a game?
He hasn't played
any game.
In Olympics.
Aside from Shinny.
The Olympics were the last game.
The Olympics, yeah.
And
how do you look? He was
not that good.
No, he was invisible.
He didn't look that good
in
the Olympics.
He was horrendous at the Olympics.
Maybe?
The hands were there, and the brain was there because, you know, that's not going to go away. But he couldn't skate at a competitive level.
Do you know what it reminds me of? I went to the game Theron Fleury played against New York Islanders in preseason a couple years ago, and it was honestly one of the best games I've ever been to. The crowd was like a playoff game. They were so into it. They were chanting his name. It went to shootout. He obviously won it in the shootout. Like, things that legends are made of was this game. But I kind of imagine Forsberg, his return, to be a very similar thing. Like, the crowd's going to be so electrified. They're going to be so excited that he's back. And he's not going to be able to play a shift without, you know, as Pierre McGuire always says, sucking dirty pond water. And, like, going back to the bench and just, like, having to sit there for a couple shifts to, you know, regain his breath and until he goes out again. But when he's standing in front of the net and the puck comes to him, it's a goal. Like, guaranteed goal. Like, Fleury was amazing that game. He still has the hands, like you said. But, the fitness is gone. And he's showing, I'm sure he'll show every second of his 37 years, so.
I was like, can we, like, go around individually and just, like, make a prediction of what will happen in this game with him?
Well, why don't you start then?
All right. I personally think his left foot will literally fall off in the game. He'll be skating along, and his left foot will be end up in the blue line, and he'll be over there across the ice looking back like, why do I have a stump now? And that's what's going to happen.
There won't even be any blood. It'll just fall off. Like, it'll be like a...
Exactly.
Gross.
Dude.
Well, I don't really think anybody else is going to disagree with that.
I've already made my prediction. I actually
would like to guess that his ankle explodes and kills Brandon Yip.
Maybe he can hit Craig Anderson with some of the shrapnel too.
That wouldn't be the worst thing for Flames fans.
it'll just blind him. It'll just blind Anderson's right eye, though. It won't kill him, is my prediction. I think he'll survive.
I mean, I guess
that's assuming that Anderson isn't looking in the stands for hot girls.
Oh yeah, or just gazing off at the ice chicks shoveling in the snow. Maybe when he's sitting on the bench, it explodes and then takes out the boards, and there's kind of a pocket of mass destruction. But who knows? He's gonna be just brutal.
whoever his line mates are, it's going to be, you know, skating. They're going to be all the way down at the other end of the ice, standing there waiting for him to finish exiting the defensive zone. I just, when you read the quotes from him, he talks a lot about how all the younger guys are so fast and he's worried about not being able to keep up with them. So,
well, and I know Ryan,
you should be worried about that.
I know Ryan talked about, or just maybe in a couple tweets about the videos that Dater put up the very first practice he came back. And it, I mean, he really looked like he was moving at half speed. Like it looked like the film was screwed up for some reason. Like it's just really painful to watch, especially because, I mean, I'm not really a fan of the guy, but the way that he used to be able to play the game was just stellar. And to see what he is now, he's just a shell of his former self. And it's quite sad, actually. So we move on to flameouts, and we'll start with you, Haley.
Well, as you can tell, my voice isn't in the best of shape. I hope my coughing hasn't been too much of an issue. But yeah, I'm a little under the weather. I unfortunately will not be able to make it next week because I'm going to another Senators game. I get to see the Islanders play. So,
well, you go to all the good games, huh? Jeez.
Yeah.
Isle Sens. That is banner stuff right there.
Battle
quality
of the basement.
Hockey.
Well, that's, I'm sad.
I'm sad too.
I mean, I'm happy for you, but I'm always sad.
Yeah.
Eric?
Yeah, I had a weird experience tonight. I was I mentioned that Matt Cook is a piece of shit on Twitter.
Oh, well,
tonight,
he is a piece of shit.
And someone replied, "That's original." I looked at their profile. This person is actually a Matt Cook fan. Somebody thinks that Matt Cook is a good hockey player and, like for some reason, somebody worth buying a jersey for. I don't understand this concept.
What?
The man is awful. He's a bad person.
He's garbage.
Who the fuck would buy a Matt Cook jersey? Why? Why?
Matt Cook's mom?
Oh, okay.
I don't know. I got unfollowed by some girl that was a Blackhawks fan, oddly enough, for saying that Matt Cook is far worse than Sean Avery. She was like, "I don't usually call out on follows, but wow, dude, unfollow." And I was like, well, I guess I'll just have to fall back on the 2,450 right. other ones that I have. Stupid.
Really hurting.
Yeah, I was sad all day.
Ryan, you got anything?
Not really, I guess. Yeah, no, I'll say no, I don't.
WI?
So it turns out, full retraction from Hit the Post.
And this pains me. This pains me to no
pains
end.
Pains me as well. Apparently, Labardius is correct when he says Rennie Burke. We discovered last night the correct
how is that possible?
The correct pronunciation is in fact Rennie Burke. It hurts, right? It hurts. Just take a second.
How did you
to
find this out?
Well, it's kind of a long story, but let's just say I know somebody who is from Lac La Biche. I won't go into detail on that, but let's just leave it at, in fact, True has known him since a long time ago, and Rennie Burke.
That is
kills me.
Changes my whole perception.
It kind of makes me feel bad for calling Azevedo the wrong name because, of course, we all know now that it's actually pronounced Azevedo. But I will continue to call him Azevedo as I will continue to call Rennie Burke.
You know what? That's
Rennie Burke.
People have called me much worse things than screwing up my last name. So, anything else?
I think that's it. I have another little thing brewing, but I think I might put it in a post over on mine.
Are you not gonna talk about your signing yesterday?
Oh, that's not what it was at all. That's obviously been posted already. But yes, Mark Giordano took the time to sign two-thirds of his name on the back of my jersey yesterday. So that was awesome. There's definitely part of it missing. I think it's just an initial MG5, but that's cool. One Gio jersey down. I couldn't bring myself to wear the Gio captain's jersey with the potential looming that he might actually see that. So,
well, you were worried about him, not about Iginla when Iginla walked by.
I wasn't worried about Iggy; he just laughed. But I feel like Gio would be like offended somehow. Maybe.
Mike.
Well, I just wanted to say that going to that game yesterday was tons of fun, and it's great to see us beat the reigning champs, even if they are a little bit decimated. And the only other thing was I saw a picture today of the on Facebook of the Heritage Classic equipment that's coming in. Super pumped for the Heritage Classic equipment, or you know, for the Heritage Classic coming up. But these pants that they're wearing that are kind of gray and everything else is kind of yellow and red.
They're beige.
No, but if you look at the picture, they look pretty gray.
Sir, madam, I just saw this on the Flames official Twitter feed. That color is technically cream, okay. is what they call okay. it.
Yes.
But I was surprised that they were...
It matches the crest on the jerseys.
Right. I was surprised that they were actual pants and not pant shells. I presumed that they would just be pant shells to go over top of the regular pants, but what do I know?
Well, and that's the thing. The pants they showed, like, I don't know. They don't look like they match the crest to me, but I don't know.
Well, but everybody thought the jersey was a lot more Ronald McDonald than it actually was, right? So, once again, it's just the photos. What it actually looks like in real life is probably different. But I'm a huge I'm a huge equipment whore, and I absolutely love that stuff. Like, looking at the gloves. Oh,
the gloves are cool.
I wish I actually had enough money to buy that, because I would go full out Heritage Classic gear. Just go to the ODR, tear it up. So
I actually saw a really ugly Heritage Classic jersey just yesterday, though. This little kid was wearing a Jokinen jersey, and it was really not that special.
Signed Jokinen. Oh. It was a signed Jokinen jersey.
A signed Jokinen jersey.
After further wow. review, I'm actually pretty sure that's his kid.
That would explain a lot.
Because I remembered...
He only had one head, though.
I know, but I remembered seeing those kids before there, and I was like, why? And then I remember the last time one of those kids also had a Jokinen jersey on. And just the amount of time he spent talking to them, I'm pretty sure that was his child. So I guess that's
a little girl that goes to my sister's school. But I've seen him once there before. I haven't seen the other child in question.
Well, as for me, I don't really have much either. Just once again, thanks to, I guess, WI. This time brought the beer, so that was nice. The game last night was fun. I had a good time watching the boys put up that big win. As I said, I'm huge hockey equipment whore, and I like the Heritage Classic jerseys and stuff like that, and hopefully we'll eventually be getting one of them. Other than that, I don't think I got much else. So, if everybody's done, as always, you can email us at matchsticksandmicrophones@gmail.com. Give us some feedback, hate mail, whatever the hell. If you just want to swear at us, that's okay too. I'm @AzavitaJ on Twitter. Haley's HazeFace. Mike and WI are HitThePost. Eric is Fourth Line Blog, and Ryan's Two Line Pass. Anyways, I am Justin Azavir, your host, and we will talk to you next week.